coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk. Football Hall of Fame board members and members of this year's induction team join us in studio to talk about their careers and this year's ceremony. Mike Ventola stops by with updates on both the Nationals and Phillies' top minor league prospects, plus an interview with the Nationals' top position player, Trey Turner, and Phillies' minor league outfielder and former Princeton product, Will Venable. Plus, local high school softball and volleyball features, all coming up on tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael. Glad you could be with us this evening. We have a great show lined up once again tonight, and our leadoff guest is an expert on both the Phillies and the Nationals minor league prospects, not just some of the prospects, but the very best in both the Washington and the Philadelphia organization, the outstanding radio announcer for the AA Reading Fightin' Phils, and one of the best young broadcasters out there anywhere to be found, Mr. Mike Ventola. Mike, thanks for coming in and spending some time with us.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you so much.
And you do a great job. I want to ask you about an interesting spring you had in just a moment.
Okay.
But really, when you talk about prospects for both the Phillies and the Nationals, the guys are at the AA level, at least to start the season. Mm-hmm. We'll start with the Phillies and get to Washington in a moment. The big name, of course, J.P. Crawford, doing pretty well, hitting right around 300, four doubles, four stolen bases. Phillies fans are very anxious how he's doing and when he might arrive at the big league level.
Well, I think right now for J.P., he's really off to a good start. And I think for him, he may be there a little bit longer than expected just because there are still some things he's trying to work on. But what I'm most impressed about him is his approach at the plate. Takes deep counts. He really has done a nice job from walks to strikeouts. He's walked 15 times and only struck out 11 times. So, and that's been a plus in his entire career, especially at the AA level. He, coming into the season, 60 walks compared to 50 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And that is one thing Philly fans can be very excited about with him, is just his ability to take deep counts and to walk and to really be selective about his pitch. Very exciting in the field as well. But he's made a few errors. Mm-hmm. But I will say this to Philly fans out there, when are they going to see him? Well, at the big league level, maybe quite some time, maybe September. But I think Lehigh Valley may get a chance to see him at some point this season. But for now, here in the early part of the season, I think he's going to get nestled in down in Reading.
And one of the benefits of going through a rebuilding year is there's no reason to rush him. He can work on his fielding. He can work on any hitting issues or working the count a little bit more. You have time with these players, and I know Philly fans are anxious to see these people now, but it's probably better overall to not rush any of these prospects.
No, absolutely. And he's 21 years old, Chris. Yeah. I mean, and I understand that you want to get him up there. You want him playing every day. But you know what? Enjoy Freddie Galvis a little bit up there as well right now in the big league level. And I think Freddie is trying to do a good job up there. Mm-hmm. So let JP work on things so that when the time comes, he goes up to Lehigh Valley, then goes up to Philadelphia. He is really ready to go. So I know last season was a little bit different with Aaron Nola, just kind of getting pushed through the system was a little quicker just due to the fact that the Phillies having a need for pitching at the time. But right now for JP, I think just patience, allow him to develop, because there's still some things, like I said, he has to work on.
Yeah. Now, another prospect at the AA level, Jorge Alfaro. I was really excited. I knew about him even before the Phillies traded for him. When people were looking at Joey Gallo, I thought, well, if Alfaro can be part of this deal, I think they got a very nice find. Got off to a great start, was hitting 500. Yesterday, preparing for this show, I looked at the numbers. He's still hitting 500, and then I did some more research, and he has an oblique injury. And, of course, he missed most of last year with an injury. So what's the latest with him?
Jorge, right now, he is hopefully going to be back sooner than expected. I know the reports are out there. It's going to be weeks, months. But the Fightin' Phils do have another catcher on the roster, Greg Brodzinski, who was brought up from extended right now. So the plan here for Alfaro is to just take some time more here on the injured list. So I think for him, it was not as bad as I think it was reported, but I think for Jorge, once he does get back, I think he's going to try to recapture, obviously, how well he was. And he was a big part of the lineup. He was 18 for 36, as you mentioned, hitting 500. So, and then on an eight games played, on an eight-game hitting streak, a four-hit game, a three-hit game, hitting a triple, I mean, hitting a double, showing his speed on the base paths. Yeah. So a pretty complete player from an offensive standpoint. Because for me, I'm trying to see how he will look to be defensively, just because I know that's where he has some work on, calling the game, fielding the position in itself too, but a dynamite arm throwing down the second. So I do think he will be back, at hopefully sooner than later. When that date is, I don't know. I know it looked like as if he was supposed to be called off a couple of days ago, but now it looks like it's going to take a little bit more time.
Another big name, Roman Quinn. A couple of years ago, he was kind of targeted by Phillies fans as the center fielder of the future. Has had some injuries the last couple of years. He's been injury-free, I believe, so far, but despite six stolen bases, which is a team high, batting average isn't exactly where you like to see right now.
Now, I was talking to a little bit with Roman before the game on Tuesday, and you know, he goes, I'm not off to the start that I wish. And I said, you're still early. Get your legs back into it and whatnot. So, and I think that's part of it for Roman. He missed so much time last year due to the injury. And I think even him having a healthy spring training, a productive spring training, I still think for Roman, it's one thing to face your own guys and to go through batting practice and all that and to play in some minor league games. But once you get the regular season where guys are really, you know, 100% playing other guys from other teams, I think for him, he's still just trying to get situated. So I think once May starts to roll around and he starts seeing more pitches and seeing how guys are adjusting to him, I think he'll be able to adjust. So because once he's on the base paths, Chris, my goodness, you mentioned about the six stolen bases. He is quite a lot of fun, and he's already a superb, I think, fielder out there in center field. His arm strength is average to above average. So I do think Roman, when healthy, is quite a productive player.
All right, a couple other names. They're not the top prospects, but they're off to great starts. Jake Fox, an infielder, hitting close to 300 with a team high, five home runs. And Dylan Cousins, second on the team with four homers and also four stolen bases, an outfielder by trade. Tell us a little bit about those guys.
Well, for Dylan Cousins right now, who was supposed to pretty much make his Reading debut at the start of this season, as you have seen, but he caught fire last year in Clearwater. He came up to Reading, was a big contributor for the Fight and Phil's deep playoff run, hit 350 in 11 games, and really showed his stuff even in the playoffs as well, too. I've been on the record saying that I think Dylan Cousins has a chance to have a big year in Reading. Big, tall, athletic guy. Could have been a defensive end. He played football growing up and was getting recruited down there in Arizona at some pretty big Division I schools. So very athletic, and for a big guy at 6'6", right around that height area, he can even run on the base paths too a little bit. And he's got a strong arm out there in the outfield. I think for him right now, the strikeouts are a little too high. I think he's pressing a little bit. But I think once he starts to settle in, hitting coach Frank Cacciatore is very good. Works with these guys extensively. I think once that Dylan starts to get more fine-tuned here in the season, he's really going to have a big start. And I mentioned about Jake Fox. If you've seen Bull Durham, he's like Crash Davis to a T. He is a lifer. Just got back from Korea last season where he had played well, but he got hurt, and he really has enjoyed his home here with the Phillies. That's part of the reason why he wanted to sign back. And he was a little disappointed starting the year with Reading. He thought he would be up here in AAA Lehigh Valley, but he is such a team-first guy. He's been doing this for so long. He said, you know what? I'm going to make the best of this. I'm going to get some wins. I'm going to help coach some of these young guys. He's kind of like a player coach in that aspect, Chris. And I think, you know, when fans come to baseball town, when they come to Reading, every time Jake Fox's name is called, they're hoping for a home run, because when he hits one, it goes quite a distance.
Now, as far as pitchers with the Phillies organization, two pitchers acquired in trades, Ben Lively, Alex Asher, both off to pretty good starts. In fact, Ben was just named Eastern League Pitcher of the Week, I believe. Tell us a little bit about how those two guys are doing.
Well, Ben Lively right now, I have been really impressed with him. Just two walks so far through 24 innings. And with the amount of strikeouts he has as well, with 27 strikeouts, which leads the Eastern League. And I think that is beyond impressive. And for a guy like him who, when he came over, he had pitched out in the California League, and he had a lot of success, struck out a lot of batters. I said, you know, for him this season, he needs to kind of bring that player he was with the Cincinnati Reds organization. So far, he is doing that. Very confident. They've worked on his release point. When talking with pitching coach Steve Schrank down with us in Reading, when he was releasing, it was kind of like throwing a pie. Now he's actually a little bit more crisp when he comes through in his motion, and it's showing. A confident kid, a great kid, and I honestly believe that Ben is due for a pretty nice season, and maybe he'll make his way up the Lehigh Valley some point. You mentioned about Alec Asher. I think he was a guy that was a little disappointed starting the year in Reading after spending some time in the big leagues, spending last season with a very good time in AAA Lehigh Valley. I think that's where he felt he was going to end up. And for Alec, though, leads the Eastern League in innings pitched. He's been a good soldier. I think he's been a bright example for this rotation for a guy that's had some major league time, showing the younger guys like Lively, like Nick Pivetta, and Paul Owens Award winner from last season, Ricardo Pinto. So Alec, though, I hope he gets the move up, man, because I think he's really going to be a special piece, part of this Phillies future.
Yeah. Now, as far as the bullpen, I, the beginning of the year, Phillies fans were like, this bullpen stinks. What's going on with the rebuild? You know, why'd you get rid of Ken Giles, blah, blah, blah. And first of all, people needed to calm down. And just it's a rebuilding year. Yeah. You know, you have some pieces here you're trying to find. You're building for the future. But the second reason why I didn't think people should panic about the bullpen is there's some very talented relievers. A couple of them are at AA, especially at Dubre Ramos, who's off to a good start.
Oh, right now, yeah, he's really doing a nice job. His past two outings have been a little shaky, but look, you're going to get that from time to time. No one's going to go out there and throw scoreless innings each time. So, but he's 5-for-6 in save opportunities right now, and he's on the 40-man roster. This was a guy that did not pitch high, did not get to really pitch above the lower levels until last season. He had jumped over Clearwater, essentially, coming to Reading, and was dynamite, pitched in the later innings even last season. I think he learned a lot from Stephen Shackelford, who was the closer in Reading last season. So, and one thing, too, was there wasn't going to be a designated closer, really, essentially, here in Reading, but Ramos has kind of taken that role and said, it's mine. And I think as long as he continues to track, he's going along, Chris. I mean, he's a guy, because he's on a 40-man, hey, you know what? Lehigh Valley could be a destination, but if the Phillies really want to reach, they can pull him straight up, which has happened before.
Yeah, a lot of guys with electric stuff too, which is, I think, is exciting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. His fastball is extremely good, and you know, he mixes his off-speed stuff in very, very well too, and very confident on the mound, and throw strikes, and that's what essentially you want to see, especially out of relievers.
Before we move on and talk about some Washington prospects, anyone else at the AA level that deserves some attention, or anyone else you'd like to see come to Reading over the next few months?
Well, I think right now there's been a guy in Angelo Mora that's been with Reading right now. He's been kind of like a super utility guy. Last season he played some third, played some second base, but he could do a little bit more. When I was talking with our hitting coach down in spring training, he said, yeah, Angelo, he's going to play left field. He's going to play right field. He's going to move around a little bit, because I think that's how the Phillies kind of see him right now. He's hitting right near 300. He's missed the past few games. Some of the other guys are getting some attention right now. But with Angelo right now, who is not on a high priority list, but when he has been in the lineup, he's made some good plays, bats from both sides of the plate, and I think can be a guy that fans in Reading or even Philly fans will start to get to know a little bit. And in regards to guys that I'd like to see coming up, you know, it's always exciting to see a name like a Cornelius Randolph, who is down in Lakewood right now. He's trying to get things figured out. I think he's still a long way off. But for me, I think, you know, when you look at some of the guys that were in Clearwater, a guy that just got called up, I was excited to see him, Miguel Nunez. The fight and Phil sent down Elises Joaquin, who had been struggling. Nunez has got some plus stuff, a big guy, 6'6". Pretty forceful on the mound. He made his AA debut on Tuesday night. So did give up a run. It was a home run. But regardless, I'm excited to see what he can contribute to the back end of that bullpen.
Our special leadoff guest, Mike Ventola, outstanding announcer for the Reading Fight and Phils. Also just saw the Harrisburg Senators, the AA team of the Washington franchise, last week. You called all their games. The big name, of course, for Washington fans, Lucas Giolito, their number one prospect. Some Washington fans were a little surprised he didn't start the year at AAA. They're in a different situation, obviously, than the Phillies. They're looking to win now, and I think people were hoping that if he starts at AAA, gets off to a good start, he could be an impact player for the second half of the year. But he started at AA. So what did you see of him the other day?
Well, when I was talking with some of the people at Harrisburg and in kind of reading a few things online prior to Lucas Giolito's start, he struggled a little bit against us. Though some of it was contributed to some of the errors that the Senators made in the field. But I think the organization was at a point, well, do we want him to get some extra work in, or do we want to make that big step now? And I think they kind of went more the conservative, and I think the right choice in giving him a chance to get his feet wet a little bit more, work on some things, and if he does what he is asked, he'll make that big jump up, you know, to AAA, and then from there make his way up to the major leagues. And I do think Giolito will be pitching for the Nationals at some point this season. So he's exciting. He's electric and a first-round pick, and I think Nationals fans are really going to enjoy watching him. It was the only start I've seen him pitch, so going off there, like I said, he struggled a little bit, but he's got a plus fastball. He'd been working on a two-seamer from what I understand. I was reading an article in the Washington Post, so I think for National fans and even Philly fans, Philly fans may have to worry about him a little bit when he starts pitching against them up at the big league level. But I think right now, when I look at Lucas Giolito, he's a guy I think National fans will really start to get behind. And I think he'll be up there at AAA maybe sooner rather than later.
Yep. A couple other players currently with the Senators. Their number five prospect in their organization, Ronaldo Lopez, big-time strikeout guy. I guess he's been struggling a little bit, has a high ERA. Strikeouts not there as much so far. Number six prospect infielder, Wilmer DeForo, he's hitting under 200. Number 16 prospect, Rafael Batista, though, is hitting right under 300. So there's some good and there's some bad. So obviously there's still some talent at the double-A level behind Giolito.
No, Lopez, I liked him. I mean, he went six innings against us in his start, and I know he's still looking for that first win, but I think he's a guy that can start to turn some heads this season. Got ahead of a lot of the hitters against the Fightin' Phils. And, you know, to me, I only see one walk with five strikeouts as he did against us. I thought I ended up going to Harrisburg's radio announcer, Terry Byerman, said, wow, this guy's got some stuff here a little bit. And he goes, well, I'm excited to see him progress a little bit more. So with Lopez, I think he's a guy that's on the radar mm-hmm. for the Nationals right now. You mentioned about Wilmer DeForo, who is he's struggling right now. But I think after seeing him a little bit last season, I think the Nationals think he's got a chance to be an everyday player, but can also maybe he's on the bubble from being an everyday player to maybe being a guy that could be a strong bench option as well mm-hmm. once he makes his way up to Washington. So, but you see Defoe's upside. He's got a good approach at the plate, could play well in the field, and I think that's some characteristics that I think Harrisburg's still trying to work on with him. Rafael Bautista was a guy that I actually, of the names we just talked about, I liked him a lot. Mm-hmm. He covers a lot of ground out there in the outfield. He's got some pop in his bat a little bit. You can see the ball kind of explodes a little bit off his bat. So I think he's a guy really, I know when you see number 16 prospect, they're kind of bubble guys. Well, can they make that jump or are they just going to ever stay a prospect? He's a guy that I really think that has a chance, especially now the way he's kind of hitting. He went 5-for-16 against us in four games. And the Reading Fightin' Phils, they kind of dominated the series except that second game where they beat the Fightin' Phils 8-0 to Senators. So Bautista's a guy that if we get a chance to talk again in the future when we face Harrisburg again, he's a guy that I'm sure going to be sitting there saying on the radio, Fightin' Phils fans, watch out for this guy. He could be the player to watch here tonight.
Anyone else on Harrisburg's roster really caught your eye, or any other surprises around the Eastern League that you've seen so far?
Well, I think right now, when I look around the Eastern League, and I know we're in, you know, with this being Philly's country, so more of a National League style of style-minded fans. But I will say this: Aaron Wilkerson opened up against us in Baseball Town for the Portland Sea Dogs, a double-A affiliate for the Boston Red Sox. He was very, very good. He struck out 11, and he had actually just got briefly called up. And then he will get the opportunity to actually start against us this upcoming series this weekend when the Fightin' Phils make their trip up to Portland, Maine, which is beloved 8 hours away. So it's a nice little bus trip. But he's a guy that I think strong fans of Major League Baseball are going to see his name a little bit. And I think he had a lot of success down in Salem last season, really did a nice job there. And like I said, he pitched extremely well against us. So I'm excited to kind of see him. But for us, we haven't seen every other team in the Eastern League yet. We've only seen Richmond. We've seen Harrisburg. We've seen Portland. Now just wrapping up a series against Cleveland's AA affiliate, the Akron Rubberducks. Clint Frazier, he was a top prospect with the Indians. Hit a first pitch home run against Pinto on Tuesday night. So he's another guy that I'm excited to see a little bit more here as the Fightin' Phils and the Ducks will play quite a few games against one another this season.
Now, before we let you go, you had a great treat this spring. You announced the Phillies game, which is in itself a pretty high honor. But you also got to work with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson, who are great people, too. So what was that experience like calling a Phillies game?
Well, it was a dream come true. I was extremely excited about it. And, you know, as a lot of broadcasters in our industry, you know, that's the goal. You know, that's to where you'd like to be. And working with those guys is a treat. I've gotten to know Scott and Larry very well. They're great guys. Yeah. They're everything that Phillies fans may listen to on the radio. They are just like that. They are funny. They have great rapport. And when I was down there in, we did the game in Lakeland, Florida, when the Phillies were playing the Tigers, it was pretty cool. Aaron Nola had made the start that day. I mean, we're just in between innings, just laughing, having a good time. And, you know, also for me, seeking out their advice, Scott was very good to me. And, you know, it was pretty cool because I'm supposed to do innings 4 through 6. They gave me the 7th inning to do lead play-by-play as well, too. But I think part of it was there were a lot of changes happening. Scott looks at me and goes, I don't want to go on and talk about all these changes. So, Mike, we're going to put you out there. And working with Larry's a treat just because his knowledge is unbelievable. And, you know, we were enjoying a couple pizza slices during the broadcast as well, too. So someone brought up pizza to us, and we're just, you know, sitting there having a good time. We got to eat. You know, we're hungry throughout the game. So plus it's radio. So, you know, we get to have some fun and describing all the action. And I'm hoping I can get another opportunity down the line. And
sure you will.
It was definitely, like I said, a dream come true.
Yeah. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. I know you have valuable time during the season, but thanks for all your insights and for spending some time with us this
Chris, evening. Thank you so much. Love to do it again.
All right. Mike Vintola, outstanding announcer for the AA Reading Fight and Phils, kind enough to join us during his busy in-season schedule. And speaking of prospects within the Nationals and Phillies organization, Trey Turner and Will Venable are two players in both the Phillies and Washington organization. They're in two very different positions, however, at AAA. Turner, of course, the Nats' most advanced position prospect, looking for his first full-time Major League gig, while the veteran Venable is returning, looking to return to the big leagues. Here's our interview with both players.
Goals are kind of the same as last year, you know, just continue to get better, try to improve defensively, offensively, any way I can, continue to grow, and, you know, stat-wise, don't have any goals set, just whatever happens, have fun and enjoy and try to get as many wins as you can. They wanted me to work on the arm strength. I think it's just a matter of being consistent, you know. I think I have enough arm to play shortstop. It's just a matter of making the long throws, making every play, and then trying to be consistent, and then also be a leader, you know. I think it's... But some people are natural leaders. Some people are, you know, lead by example. And I think that, you know, the more people you have like that on your team, the better off you'll be. So I need to work on that a little bit, or those two things, and then hopefully I can go from there. I've led off my whole life until last year, and I batted second a lot. And I started liking second, you know, a little bit more. But it doesn't matter to me, you know, 1-2. I just like hitting at the top of the order and trying to use the speed to help out the team. Yeah, I think we're going to be pretty good. You know, we got a lot of guys who've competed at very high levels. A lot of guys have been in the big leagues up and down, and some guys trying to make it there. So I think we're pretty well rounded, and we should make a pretty good run at it.
Yeah, it's been all right, you know. I feel like I landed at a good spot, you know. I feel fortunate to be in this organization where I know there'll be some opportunity up there. And in the meantime, you know, I heard great things about this town and have, you know, their love for the Iron Pigs, and excited to get out there and play some baseball. Yeah, you know, we came and played Penn, and, you know, played Temple, you know, a couple games in the Palestra. So, been to Philly a few times to play some basketball. Obviously, you know, you'd like to be in the big leagues, but, you know, I'm here now. I'm excited to be here and excited to go to work and play some baseball, help these young guys out and win some games. And then as far as, you know, getting back up there, that'll all happen when it needs to. And, you know, not really worried about that right now.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Time for tonight's Sports Talk trivia question. We have another easy one this week. Two easy ones in a row after several hard ones. Tonight's question, in what city and state does the NFL Hall of Fame reside? In what city and state is the NFL Hall of Fame? And we have a couple nice prizes that you can win. Here's more information and details on that.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
And in addition to the video on demand $10 certificate, we also have a Phillies baseball cap. Authentic Phillies baseball cap from the Majestic Clubhouse. That and the $10 certificate can be yours for getting tonight's question. In what city and state does the NFL Hall of Fame reside? Our special guest joining co-host Joe Craig and myself, we have Tom Redding, the chair of the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame. Board member and former inductee Bob Mitchell, and one of the members of this year's 2016 class inducted into the Hall of Fame, Mr. John Bendekovic. So Tom, Bob, and John, thanks so much for joining us. Joe, I know, has a lot of great stories he's going to share.
Of them we can't talk about. We can't tell all those stories.
Just get the basics out of the way, though. Tom, I want to start with you, if you can give us some information about the foundation and the mission overall.
Yeah, the National Football Foundation, the Lehigh Valley chapter, has two main goals that we... In March, we have a scholarship offered to the 33 high schools, and we give each kid a membership into the Hall of into the National Association. Mm-hmm. And then it's a great banquet held up in Northampton Community Center. And then we also honor the local colleges, Lehigh, Lafayette, Moravia, Muhlenberg, and mm-hmm. that's it, right?
Kutztown.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is, and why we're here tonight, is that a couple years ago, they gave me this chairmanship of this committee of finding Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. guys that added a lot to the game of football in the Lehigh Valley. And this year's class, I like to read the names of the guys that are being inducted. By the way, the banquet will be next Friday, again, at the Northampton Community Center. The number one guy I have on my list here is Dr. Dennis McGorry. Mm-hmm. He graduated from Central Catholic in 63. He played football at Rutgers, and he is a physician. He's a local doctor. He was Central Catholic's medical sports doctor for a number of years and was involved in the Lark game. And I think he's been put into their Hall of Fame mm-hmm. because of his job as a physician with the Lark game. Dick Snell, a former coach and official, he graduated in 65 from Tri-Valley High School and was an award-winning football player at Lebanon Valley High School, graduated in 69. He's a local guy. He's from Palmerton. Mm-hmm. And Marty Androvic. Now, some people say, what did he do for football? Well, Marty officiated a lot of football.
Yes, yeah, he did.
And he got nominated. The process is he gets on the list of being nominated. The list maybe has 30, maybe 40 guys on the list. And the committee gets the nomination, they vote, and mm-hmm. I tally the votes, and Marty got right in the middle. So he was honored by our committee. Marty graduated from Mays High School in 51, mm-hmm. and then officiated PIA football and baseball forever. Mm-hmm. I got to tell one story. after I sort of got retired from coaching football, you know, sometimes we get retired earlier than we really want. I used to coach football at Liberty High School and Becker High. And then I was asked not to come back. So I said, you know, I was officiating baseball for a long time. And I said, you know, I can do football. So I passed the test, got jobs, and one Marty story. We're at Liberty High School. And he's the referee, I'm the umpire. And there's a timeout, and him and I start talking, and he says, look up there. I says, look up where? He says, look at the light standard. There's somebody up there. I says, Marty, there's nobody up there. So he made these kind of things up all the time. So he's on our committee. I mean, he's going to be in our class.
That's true.
Les Steckel, mm-hmm. another local guy. He graduated from Whitehall in 64, and played at the University of Kansas. And Les Steckel's main claim to fame is the NFL.
Sure.
I'm not going to read his resume right now, but he's an unbelievable coach. Mm-hmm. And he agreed to come back. He lives in Tennessee, and he's coming in next weekend, and he will be inducted into our Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And the last member, of course, is
John Bendekovic.
Yeah. John, what did it feel like for you to get that call?
I was really honored by that particular call.
it's a pleasure to join a special group of individuals. Mm-hmm. And what makes it so interesting for me and so meaningful is the people that have been served in the past. You know, you look at the 1982 selection, and you had people like Chuck Benarek, Al Erdesi, Jim Ringo, John Bernie Crum, and also Andrew Lay, and they all played a big part in football in the Lehigh Valley. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it so much interesting to me.
I guess it's a quick story, too. I got to say this. You know, everybody talks about weightlifting and how important it is to today's high school programs and college programs. This guy right here, John Bendegovitz, is the guy who started weightlifting on the high school level in the Lehigh Valley at Whitehall High School. And everybody else scrambled to try to catch up fast because Whitehall was jumping ahead of everybody when it came to strength and conditioning. And John's the guy that started that.
That was in 1973 when I started that. And Matt Millen was a sophomore at the time. And at the school, we had no facilities, no weights. I had a few weights. I was able to dig up a few sets of dumbbells, squat rack, and bench. And then we had no place at the school to work out because the field house hadn't been built yet. So we used the park down at the behind the Whitehall Mall. And we had about 40 kids there every day. They would drive down. And we used that from January of 73 until May of 73. And then we moved over to the old high school in Hockey. Mm-hmm. Did that for a few months, and then by the end of 73, we had the field house built, and I had to deal with the head custodian there because he had visions of using that weight room for his tractors and lawnmowers. So that was some obstacles to overcome. Yeah.
And nowadays, schools have state-of-the-art facilities for that.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah. Bob, you've seen things for both sides. You know, you were a great inductee a few years ago. You're now on the board. How tough is it? Because you have so many great names to choose from. How tough is it to come up with this list? And you have six great names again this year.
It's difficult. Mm-hmm. Because you know we put together the list, and you know you start identifying what these gentlemen did, and how do you quantify? How do you say that this person is number one, this number two? But you know everybody in the group studies it, and we talk about it a little bit, and we come up with these names, and
one of
I was
lucky.
One
of the hardest jobs is to find them.
Like the chairman knows that. We've been trying to get a hold of Les. Like Les's voicemails.
You know, how do I get a hold of this Les Steckel guy?
Yeah.
But he was very cooperative when I did finally.
It's been about a month.
You probably too get a lot of pressure because you have so many different eras of football.
Well, that's one of the things.
You know, that's got to be a challenge.
One of the things the board stress is that we miss guys from past generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're before my time, and I'm 68.
And you're an old guy.
Yeah. I'm 68, so we're all the same age.
Yeah.
And I'm not a local guy, so I really have to do some work, do some research.
Right. Right.
You know, just to come up with the names. A lot of these names I do not know.
Well, and a thing too, Tom and Bob, that people don't realize is the Lehigh Valley, the history of football in the Lehigh Valley is really rich. I mean, you can go back, and if you go back into the 30s and the 40s, I mean, you're going to find a lot of names that played big-time football. You know, the big teams of that era, yeah. Notre Dame's, the Army. And believe me, Army at one time was major, major power. And we had a lot of Lehigh Valley people who played on those teams back in those days.
Last year, we put a gentleman in the Hall of Fame. Give me his name quick.
From?
From Northampton.
Novogratz?
No.
Okay, I was there, and I should remember that. I don't remember.
But he moved to California, and he was 90-some years old.
Yeah.
And finding information about him, the internet really helped.
John Pritko, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Who?
Pritko?
Yes,
that's
Dave
it.
Pritko.
That's it.
Yeah, and we always had a rule that you had to be there, just come to the banquet, or you're dead. That year, I was able to get contact him, talk to him for a half hour on the phone. He was very appreciative. last summer he died.
Yeah, well, yeah. Thank God you
so
got
him. So we got him in time.
Yeah.
Our special guests in studio, Tom Redding, chairman of the National Football, National Football Foundation Hall of Fame, Bob Mitchell, board member and former inductee, John Bendekovitz, 2016 inductee. We're going to continue our conversations with them in just a little bit, and you can share some of the stories you shared with us off air in just a moment. right now it's thumbs up, thumbs down. This is where our panelists identify someone in the sports world and single them out for doing something really good or something not so good. Joe, we'll start with you.
I'll start thumbs up, and I'm going to give it to my alma mater, Parkland High School, hiring Tim Monsman as the head football coach. Mark my words, all football coaches in the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference, be alert, because they will go, Parkland will be on a new level that you have not seen before.
When you say new level, you mean?
A new level. As good as Parkland has been, and some of these great Eastern teams, some of the great Becca teams, Tim Monsman, with the resources and the student body that he gets at Parkland, will take them to a level. LaSalle High School, St. Joe's Prep, watch out.
All right, John, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to pick the Eagles to win seven games, in spite of the Bradford deal, but I think they're going to win seven games.
Mm-hmm. Bob, how about you?
I still have black and gold running around in my veins, so my thumbs up is going to go out to the Northwestern baseball team. Yeah. He's having another great year. Duran Perino is the first-year head coach, following in some large foot steps that former coach Lenny Smith created.
And Tom?
I'm going to give a thumbs up to the Bethlehem chapter, the PIA baseball officials. This Sunday they're having a little dinner, and they're going to honor the three high schools with a sportsmanship award to the to the three high schools. Yeah.
All right, thumbs up for me goes to the Deerif volleyball team for two reasons. First reason, they were involved in a community event over the weekend. Cops and Kids did a great job working with the community. The second reason why they get a thumbs up will be coming up a little later in tonight's show. Right now, our first local high school football.
There you go.
Local high school sports feature, and the Freedom softball team had been undefeated before running into their city rivals and defending state champions, Bethlehem Catholic. Sports Talk videographer Alyssa Scheckler got highlights and post-game reactions of the Hawks' win over the Pates.
Today's game, you know, we were highly motivated to coming into this game. We really wanted to get the win. We did. We qualified for districts. We knew they had a strong team. They were undefeated. So we really wanted to, you know, come in and execute our game plan.
I thought we played very well. I thought we hustled. We had some timely hits. We had fantastic pitching from Elise Cuttick. Played great defensively. I thought we played a good all-around game because we beat a very, very, very good team today.
It was a great day of softball. It was just a lot of fun to come out with our teams, and we were, like, really excited for this game because, of course, it's a Bethlehem rivalry of, like, Becca Freedom, and we're really excited for the next game against Liberty.
Obviously, the Bethlehem schools, obviously there's some, you know, there's motivation to beat them, and, you know, as long as we just keep playing our game, you know, I know Liberty's a very good team. They have good pitching, good hitting, and so do we. So if we just, it'll be a well-fought game.
And we're having a really good season. It's a lot of fun. I really like playing with these girls. It's like a great atmosphere, and everyone gels really well. Like, it's everyone's really good friends with everyone else, so it's a lot of fun to play with this team.
You know, as long as we play Becca High softball, we played Becca High softball today, and if we keep doing that, we're going to make a pretty good run at it. You know, if we just stay as one and keep competing for each other and playing for each other, we'll be good.
Chance to interact with us.
Call, email, or tweet us your sports comments, questions, and opinions.
We want to hear from you right now.
And now, here's more RCN Sports Talk.
You know how it works.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special guest, Hall of Fame. Joe, how did you get on this panel with all these Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
Bob Mitchell, and Tom Redding, chair. Of course, Bob, former inductee. John will be inducted this year. And John, I want to ask you, what are you most looking forward to the induction ceremony and seeing a lot of great names again?
I just enjoy the whole situation as it is. I'm looking forward to meeting some old honorees. It's a big event for me, like I said before, that the fact that so many fine football people have played a major role mm-hmm. in Lehigh Valley sports, and I now will be a part of that, which makes me very happy.
Tom and Bob, you've been through this ceremony several times. What's kind of the most special moment about the ceremony itself?
Well, I'm going to tell John one piece of advice.
Sure.
Keep it short.
but no one ever follows that advice. No one ever.
When I talked to Tom a few weeks ago on the phone, I says, well, how long do I get, Tom? He says, listen, John, you've got 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, we get the hook out. We hook you right out of that seat. You know? So I'll try and stay tuned. Well,
the guy I'm worried about is Les Steckel. I mean,
because the guy I'm worried about is Marty.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Marty's the one I'd be concerned about.
Absolutely. But, it's a good night. I mean, everybody enjoys it, and I said, we have a great group.
I had a great. I was really enjoyed it last year. I got to go last year. One of my former players was inducted, and it was great.
Who was that?
Rich Garza was inducted last year, and it was just great to be there. Saw a lot of guys I haven't seen for years, and it was really a nice.
Yeah, the Garza family was very appreciative.
Great people.
Absolutely.
Great people.
It's a validation mm-hmm. of all the people that you worked with, because you don't get there yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a result of the players that you have, the kids that you have, the coaches that you worked with, the parents of the kids. You know, it's a validation of the entire program, and that's... Yeah. That's what I take the most pride in.
In fact, I have one or two more names to give to you guys.
Well, you know what? We are always looking to make this list
inclusive. I'm sure
Absolutely.
You are.
And if you have somebody, give
I'll
me the
I'll see
names.
That you get the names, Bob.
And like we were saying earlier, the new kids on the block, the new kids, everybody knows them, and they have to wait.
Yeah, there's this pecking. There is a time when it's you got to wait your turn.
And then I give like Dennis McGorry's people called me and they said, well, what about this guy? Well, what about that guy? I said, well, actually, those guys are on the list. Now mm-hmm. they got to get go through the process.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you about that because you see, some schools' Hall of Fame, they try to get someone new, someone from a couple years ago, and then someone from the past. But I mean, sometimes when you're just looking at a specific age, there may not be. You know, how do you compare the different ages?
It's hard.
Well, like I said earlier, this list, they're all the same age.
Yeah.
I mean, except for Marty, but I don't know the answer to that. Our board knocks me in the head all the time about looking back in the history. So that's a hard thing to come up with. Like Bob says, we don't know everybody.
And there weren't that many guys that played in the 30s and 40s still around that you can get recommendations
but
from.
But we could if we had family that we could honor them, would be nice.
Suggestion as an idea to get those kinds of names would be to go to the archives of the high schools and have the ADs and people at the high schools come up with some ideas for you, because they'll know who played in 1942. Those kind of people will know. You know, they've got the records. They've got the yearbooks. Go at Liberty, in my athletic office, when I was the AD, I had yearbooks back to the 1920s. So they have the information, and you might be able to get some ideas from those kind of people. Just as a thought.
Another guy is Burian.
Oh, Evan Burian. Yeah, he's a historian.
He wrote tons of books.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have his books, and I try to put him in the Hall of Fame. He got elected, mm-hmm. and he turned it down last year and says, I didn't do anything in football.
Yeah.
But his books.
On the contrary, I played against him in the late 50s. Evan Burian was a heck of a football player at Emmaus High School.
Yes, he was.
A heck of a football player.
Our special guest.
Ran over me more than once.
Well, there's quite a few that found that guy. Bob Mitchell, Tom Redding, and John Bendekovitz are special guests. We're going to be back with our final segment in just a moment. But right now, our final feature of the evening. And after a 4-2 season last year, the Deer Huff boys volleyball team has made a resurgence and is now contending for a district playoff berth. We talked with the Huskies about their success following a big win this week over Easton.
Easton fought hard, but we fought harder. I mean, it was a very good game. Everyone was all in, all game.
Today's match was good, but I mean, there's always more room for improvement. Like we do every game. Every game we played since the beginning of the season was just practice for the next one coming up.
We're trying really hard to get to districts. Deer Huff hasn't really had much success before, but now we're trying to get to where teams in the past haven't gotten to. and we're just trying to go out with a bang.
The road to the postseason this year has been phenomenal. These boys have been working hard day in and day out in practice. Our games, we learn every day. And I'm looking forward to, as a head coach, the first season to making districts and playing some of the top teams in the league.
We set a goal, and we're almost there. We need one more win, and we're in. And we can't wait. Honestly, we're chomping into bits just to get to the postseason and play some of the teams that are really good out there and see how well we can do.
They've made great improvement, not only from last year to this year, but from the beginning of this season till now. They have their new goal of not only, you know, they're going to obviously make districts, but they have a new goal of competing hard in districts.
The road to districts is very rough. I mean, we one more win and we're in, baby. Let's go, D-Ro.
Don't forget, a reminder, if you don't get a correct answer to a trivia question during our live airing on RCN TV, people listening on the podcast or watching us on video on demand or on a replay can have a chance at our trivia question. You email the correct answer to rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Please include your name and mailing address as we'll send out the certificate to you. The question one more time, in what city and state does the NFL Hall of Fame reside? Let's go to the phone lines and get a couple guesses. Mark from Hockendaqua is on the line. Mark, welcome to Sports Talk.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
How are you doing, Chris?
Good.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very good this evening. I think you have a guest for us for a trivia.
Yes, Canton, Ohio.
There you go.
You got it.
I knew someone would get that right in our live show.
Good job, Mark.
Hey, Mark, real quick, are you happy with the Eagles? You like the
Sure.
The move up?
Yeah, I don't know about this pick here. I'm a little iffy about this pick. It could be a little dicey with the Division II quarterback. You don't know. He's going up against some division corners and safeties are a little bit a step slower maybe than Division One.
Yeah.
So that could be questionable there. I don't. But he's got all the, the tools, the arm strength and the size. We'll see. It's a little risky, but I think it might work out.
Yeah, it's a big gamble, but a lot of people are. Well,
there's
him,
been so some other ones in history have made it from Division Two. So.
Hey, Jaworski.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil Sims.
Yeah, there have been a number of them. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Mark, we'll contact you after the show about the prize.
All righty. Thanks,
Mark. For play. Final minutes with you guys. You know, you've been sharing some stories. Any other stories about the induction ceremony itself or memories that come to mind, especially Bob? You know, you've seen this from both sides.
I got a Marty Androvic story.
everybody has a Marty Androvic story.
I was there when Uncle Marty was born.
Oh.
He became known as Uncle Marty. Yeah. Everybody knew him as Uncle Marty. Well, we were up at Pocono Mountain the week before, and we ran a shuffle pass that was called a fumble. Cost us the game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a big to-do about it. We were beside ourselves. So the chapter, the football officials chapter, has a meeting the following Sunday or Monday, I don't remember which. And obviously this shuffle pass rule is debated and discussed. Well, Marty has us the following Saturday at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. He comes up to me before the game. And Barry Schaefer was with him. He was the umpire. And he said, Coach, when you come out to run that shuffle pass, I want your quarterback to turn around to me and say, here it comes, Uncle Marty.
That was the birth of Uncle Marty.
That was the first of Uncle classic. Marty. Yes, it was. And Sean Paris was our quarterback at the time. And he looked at me and he said, do you really want me to do that? And I said, no. But that's where it came from. Uncle Marty started Saturday afternoon at Northwestern.
Yeah. And John, I know you always enjoyed working with other coaches and seeing them. Is that one of your highlights you're looking forward to next week?
Yeah, I have a good story about Whitehall. Whitehall means a lot to me, mm-hmm. Chris. I've been here a long time, and those Whitehall kids, they're just special to me. But one story always comes back to my mind, and that is back in 1981, we played up at Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. Joe Ganter was the head coach, and both had good football teams. And we went up there, and Barry Bookman was our quarterback, and we rushed for close to 300 yards. We were up 6-0 in the game. At the very end of the game, Barry Bookman got hurt. So we put our backup quarterback in there. We're on the 4-yard line with about 35 seconds to go in the game. We're up 6-0. Joe calls timeout, calls the kid over to the sideline, talks to him. Okay, we're going to go I slot right. The split end is going to run a slant, and the number two receiver is going to do a quick out for the score. So he starts jogging out into the field, and Joe called him back and says, if he's not open, don't throw the ball. So the kid goes into the huddle. Sure enough, he sprints to the right. He throws the ball. The ball is tipped into the air, and the coach's son picked it off and returned it 100 yards for a score. We lost the game 7-6, and the clock ran out. Awful. The longest ride of my life in the bus.
Coach a kid from Mount Carmel at Lehigh from that team, Rob Verano. He was a receiver.
Yep. And the coach's name was Jazz Dimonick.
Yeah,
he
Jazz
was a
Dimonick.
Coach.
Yep.
Right. He had a son that went to Notre Dame and Penn State also.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. Best of luck with the Hall of Fame induction ceremony coming up next week. And people can contact you for more information.
Yeah, they can contact me. I could squeeze a couple more people in.
Yeah, okay. Well, people can always email me and I can pass
give
it along
give
to
a
you.
Number, Tommy.
484-515-1409.
Sounds good.
All right. Anybody wants a ticket, let me know by Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Our thanks to Tom Redding, Bob Mitchell, John Bendekovitz, and Mike Ventola for joining us earlier. We'll be back next week with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. Among our guests on next week's show will be members of the Carpenter Cup to talk about this year's great event. For Joe, I'm Chris. Thanks for watching RCN Sports Talk. We'll see you next week. Good night, everyone. Thank you.